Welcome to Blind Line, the original interactive talk show exclusively for the blind and vision impaired. I'm Jonathan Mosen. It's nice to have you with us. And I suppose I should start the program with a bit of a disclaimer. If the program ends abruptly, it's because I'm being summoned to the hospital for the birth of our baby. It's sort of due any day now, and frankly, the suspense is killing me. But we're going to be talking about something of much more global significance today, and that is the question of accessible cell phones. Blind people pay for cell phone service that gives them features such as text messaging and even email and a whole range, WAP, of course, the wireless access protocol, and a whole lot of other amazing services. And they use those services on cell phones that offer them graphical access to phone books and all kinds of other features that allow them to communicate. Text messaging, of course, is becoming ubiquitous in most parts of the world. It seems to have been a trend that took a wee while to take off in the US. It was huge in Europe and the Pacific, and now it's starting to take off. Here in this country, for example, you can get information texted to you about when your plane is late by the airlines. You can get all sorts of news and things texted to you. And increasingly, even chains like McDonald's are using them. You can even buy things from vending machines using text messaging on your cell phone, all of which we are largely shut out of. And the ACB has joined with a woman who has had enough after purchasing an AudioVox cell phone that was predominantly inaccessible. And ACB has joined in with this complaint to try and get some teeth out of Section 255 of the Telecommunications Act, which seemed to hold so much promise when the regulations pursuant to that section were adopted by the FCC. And to join us to talk about this, once again we welcome the Executive Director of ACB, Charlie Crawford. Charlie, it's good to have you on the show.
Good evening. How are you, Jonathan?
Oh, I'm good. It's a frustrating business, this lack of self...
...somewhere about how some kind of big play was going on in China. It was a very artsy thing about revolution and all that. And you would think it would play well in the land of Mao Zedong, but interestingly enough, all the people that were in the audience had their cell phones out text messaging to each other. So there you go.
Yeah, it's we've got to work on this. Why do you think that, given that there is this Section 255, and that it's actually the law that says where possible these devices have got to be made accessible and that the network services have got to be made accessible, why is it that when it comes to accessible cell phones, we've really not seen much development at all?
Well, I think there are a few answers to that. One is the more global one that applies almost in every country, and that is the extent to which you have multiple law is the extent to which there's the opportunity to ignore it. There's just too much law in some senses so that people either don't know about it, only have casual acquaintance, or in the alternative just decide that I don't have to do anything about it until somebody catches me. And that's one reason, I think, for the problem. Another reason is that the incentive for the telecoms and the manufacturers of cellular equipment to actually produce this has never really taken off in the sense of seeing any kind of mass market. So the competitive forces that operate within these companies, as well as the knowledge they have that, you know, it's like any other consumer product. I mean, if you get, 5% complaints about your product, but make 95% of the people buy it, then in some bizarre measure you're doing pretty well. So that's a bit cynical, but it's kind of true.
Can there be any tie-in, though, with Section 508? I mean, presumably if there was a truly universally accessible cell phone, the government would have to buy that one.
Well, that's a good point. I think that the bottom line answer to almost any of these discrimination law questions is how much will is there in the population that is impacted by it to actually do what it needs to do to demand enforcement and then to follow up and stay with it. And that is, at least in terms of Section 255, this is the first time, I think, that there's been a truly consistent effort that has resulted in what's called a formal complaint at the FCC. But because of the nature of the FCC and its standing in the law, it really is the first level of a lawsuit.
So how much can you tell us about Bonnie O'Day's particular story?
Well, Bonnie is a highly intelligent person who I've known for a few years personally, and she is not the type of person to simply fly off the handle and get upset about something and go complain about it, as much as she's much more methodical. So that's important in terms of this particular case, because she sort of has crossed her T's and dotted her I's along the path of ultimately ending up with this formal complaint. So as it says in the press release, Bonnie essentially bought a Audiovox 9000 thinking that it was for in the world of accessibility, the narrow world of accessibility that existed at the time she bought it, it was probably one of the better choices. But soon she discovered, as we all do, that there are a lot of functions that you mentioned, for example, that are not accessible to blind people. There are additional functions that everybody relies upon in the sighted world. The battery indicator, for example, or the caller ID, or changing the settings of the phone in the menus. Those functions, while perhaps not the core element to any cell phone, if you can send, you know, make a call and receive a call, I suppose one could say, well, you have a wireless phone. In effect, you do, but again, all the features that other people come to rely upon and phone books and all that are not really accessible to you vis-a-vis the text on the screen. Now, there are some compensations that have been made by certain companies. I mean, I know that AT&T Wireless, and I think Verizon's about to launch one. I think Sprint has one. They're all kind of like voice command things where you can tell the phone you want to call Joe Jones, and it will call Joe Jones. You set that up through the web, or you can set that up over the phone with the provider of the service. But those are really ancillary services and not necessarily part and parcel to the cell phone itself. And so to the extent that blind folks would have to rely upon a service that would cost us more money only to get a bit more access than what we have now, it is not necessarily a good deal for us.
When this came up on the ACB Radio Friends list, I was quite surprised and frankly appalled to see people saying, well, you know, I make notes and I can do this and this on my cell phone, and we can get around such and such by doing this. It's as if blind people, at least some of us, have become conditioned to accepting second-class status, to accepting that we will buy a product and only be able to use, say, 10 or 20% of its features and think somehow that that's okay.
MS Windows.
Well, we'll have to agree to disagree on that.
If you look at the universe of applications available for the Windows platform versus what we can actually use, the same argument would apply. Be that as it may, I think you're right. I mean, I think we have learned that, well, maybe in the suite by and by there will be full access to whatever it might be, but in the meantime, either we get mad and do nothing, or we essentially do what we can about what we've got. So in one sense, that's a strategy that makes some sense. Now, in the long run, however, it's self-defeating because we become more passive about our expectations, and the people who provide the products always say, well, aren't they amazing? They can do this or that with the product that we produce.
Yes. An example of this is just a simple one of programming the telephone book. And my wife and I have this experience where if she wants to program the phone, she will push the menu button and she'll have a selection of choices. She'll cursor down and make the selection, and it's all very intuitive and it prompts her every step of the way. Because I might add a number to my phone book, which incidentally does have built-in voice dialing, once every maybe 3 or 4 weeks, I actually have to write down quite a complicated series of instructions on my Braille light, and I don't consider myself technologically unsavvy, and I have to say, to fulfill this function, tap the button and press the down arrow key twice and then push this and press the arrow key another time, and I'm doing it all by rote, and if I accidentally push it 3 times or 1 time, my complete set of instructions is out of whack. And I just wonder why anyone would think that that kind of behavior, that kind of hoops going through is necessary.
Well, you know, as one who writes or has written computer code in the past, it's interesting because that's how a computer works. You give it a set of instructions, and once it's compiled, it will do that exact set of instructions forever. A human, on the other hand, may know the instructions, or in the alternative, have a written document showing him or her what instructions to follow, but is very likely prone to error, even the best of us. So you're absolutely right. That's a coping strategy that in some ways makes sense, but for the most part ends up being frustrating for most users. I mean, it's like when we first started using computers and we had certain programs that we knew. Once you got past this or that screen, it would talk, or you could use your Braille equipment. And what would happen is that we would hit the wrong button or go too far in one direction or another and end up in cyber hell and not really know how to get out of there. So, yes, I mean, that's the frustrations are legion. The fix really is about how do we both establish a level of expectation in our community which is truly respectful of all the different variables that go into any kind of equation like this, while at the same time focused on what we have a right to get and how we're going to get there. And that's, unfortunately, in this case, has to be a question of moving a legal action forward.
What is it technically feasible in this day and age for us to expect from cell phone manufacturers in terms of the degree to which we can access these features?
Well, it all relies upon the ability of the cell phone to receive an operating system, because all the new cell phones are using, to some extent, in greater or less measure, operating systems to essentially receive keystroke commands from the keyboard and act like a little computer. So the extent to which a cell phone has that capacity, going away from the old type of, it's like an old mechanical box. If you have an old mechanical box and all the gears are in there and you just, press a lever and it does 14 things and then the bread comes out of the box, that's fine. But the newer cell phones are much more sophisticated in the sense that they can do multiple things, and depending upon the software that's running in them, will essentially provide you with a list of features that the cell phone can do. That's good news for us because that means that it's no longer a question of having to hard code the hardware of the cell phone to get things done. Now it's a matter of, is there a software application that could run within this little operating system that will produce what we need for it to do versus playing games? And the fact of the matter is that, yes, there is this Linux-based OS that was invented in Europe, sits on a server over there, and will, when downloaded into a cell phone, just like games, will become the operating system that will then, in turn, respond to whatever you do with the cell phone with a text-to-speech conversion built into it, so that the operating system for the European application is there. Problem is getting it to run on U.S., cell phones in our case. I'm not sure whether you guys use GSM or not. Have you used GSM already?
We use both, actually. We've got CDMA as well as GSM. So you're looking at the Nokia Communicator, are you? The TalkX software, that is that the one you're talking about?
That's one of them, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's feasible or technically possible for anything that the cell phone can do for anyone else outside of graphics could be done by the software. Now, even in a graphic situation where, say, for example, you hit the menu button and this little picture of a menu comes up and it's a bit graph or something, and no software system in the world is going to know what it is. It just gets generated by pressing the key. On the way to the screen, that command that invokes the picture of the menu can also be intercepted and interpreted to be menu, and then it can say menu as opposed to just showing the bitmap. So even in those circumstances, it's reasonable to assume that we should, in the long run, as long as it's a standard sequence of events, be able to essentially decode what's going on in their cell phone and present it in speech to people through the text-to-speech algorithms. The problem with the speech is going to be exactly what happened in the early days of computers. For those of us who were around in 1980-whatever, I don't think you were born then, Jonathan.
Oh, goodness gracious me. I was I go back to the Apple IIe's.
Oh, there you go. Well, yeah. There you go. You're kind of on that cusp then. the early speech synthesizers were so bad. It was like a horror movie in the 1950s.
Yeah, the old Echo 2s were great, weren't they?
And so most people would complain, I can't understand that thing. And only the nerds would be the people that would sit there and listen to it because, you know, we'd train ourselves to figure out what it was saying and then we'd be able to, you know, do what we wanted to do on the computer. Well, as time went by, the speech improved. And the same thing's going to happen with these text-to-speech software applications in the Linux operating system or whatever operating system is going to be running in these cell phones.
Well, yes, there are some running under Windows CE as well.
That's right.
That's a
Although CE's lifespan is somewhat dubious right now, because I'm not sure how much support Windows is going to, or Microsoft is going to give CE, simply because they have other types of software they're developing that will, you know, sort of surpass what CE's capacity is.
Interesting. All right. Well, you see, this seems to me to be the tip of a very large iceberg because it's not just cell phones, but in fact a whole generation of problems relating to the inaccessibility of everyday appliances. If you like, anything that isn't a computer, we're becoming increasingly shut out of.
Well, that's a good point. You know, the old promise of Java was that it was so scalable so that it could become so miniaturized that it could run in anything. So technically your toaster would talk. That was a promise that was made back in the early days when Java was first being developed. And unfortunately, it really never took off. I think it was it's clearly scientifically possible to do. But the good news, I think, is that because there's not a proprietary or high-cost feature to acquiring a Linux application, the manufacturers have an incentive now to essentially adopt this Linux code and do whatever they want with it to make it talk, versus having to acquire licenses and spend a lot of money on Java.
Well, I should say, if you'd like to ask any questions or make any comments while Charlie's with us, you're welcome to give us a call. We're speaking to Charlie Crawford, the Executive Director of ACB. And if you'd like to call in, it's area code 212-812-2800. It'd be particularly interesting to hear from people who think this is somehow a non-issue, because it just astounds me to think that anyone would. Area code 212-812-2800, and then the conference code is 0480-5512. That's 0480-5512. And if you're listening to this program live between 1 and 3 Universal, that's 8 and 10 Eastern and whatever that is, 5 and 7 Pacific, then you can call in live. What's the process then from here? What's going to happen in terms of a determination on this issue?
Well, we have a request that this be done in an expedited fashion by the FCC. What that really means is that within 10 days of the filing of the complaint, the FCC has to start acting on it, and that the likelihood of a final resolution to this, meaning either a settlement that is acceptable to the plaintiffs, essentially Bonnie and us, or a rule and order from the FCC to the defendants, all of that should happen within a few months' time, so it shouldn't be a very long process.
Now, the fact that the company, the wireless provider, in this case Verizon Wireless, and the maker of the phone, AudioVox, have both been included, does that suggest that there is some degree of uncertainty or ambiguity about whether, in fact, the primary responsibility lies with the manufacturer of the phone or the carrier?
Is the omelet the chicken or the egg? Essentially, the problem, well, in this case, it's kind of convenient because both are listed by the FCC in their own documents on the website as manufacturers of cell phones, partly because the AudioVox is branded in terms of having the Verizon name on it. So in that sense, they both are co-manufacturers. Another larger but still equally applicable argument is that to the extent that a service provider has to procure the hardware from somewhere and the extent to which they supply specifications to the manufacturer of the hardware, that the service provider in that sense has control over what's being provided to the consumer. And if that's the case, and it is, then why did the service provider not include in the specifications much more rigorous language with regard to accessibility? So in that sense, both of them are culpable. And we have had meetings with at least one of the parties, and the problem is that as was listed in the complaint press release, we've essentially gotten, well, it's their problem. Well, no, it's their problem. Well, you know, ask your mom, ask your dad.
Yeah.
At some point, the buck's got to stop somewhere, and then, so that's what this, in part, will flesh out.
Do you have a view? I mean, would ACB care if, for example, they came back and said, look, right now we can't make the AudioVox phone accessible, but we can, for example, provide a voice in, text out, or text in, voice out gateway for text messaging and make the phone book accessible through the network. Would network-based services substitute to your satisfaction for the inaccessibility of the phone?
It's a good question. The ADA, even though this is not based on the ADA, this is Section 255 of the Telecom Act, which essentially says that things have to be accessible. The ADA has language that essentially establishes a principle, which principle is that as long as whatever it is provides equal facilitation or equal communications to people, then it's okay. Well, in the context of the question you just asked then, if there were the ability to turn on your phone and then press, say, *2 or something, and up comes an accessibility menu feature from the network that instructs your phone while you're pressing buttons and it's all accessible, I don't think anybody's going to really care about that. So, yeah, I think that would be a fine solution.
There are all sorts of rumors that one vendor in particular is about to release an accessible cell phone that works with U.S. standards such as CDMA. Are you aware of that?
I'm not sure which one you're talking about. I mean, I've heard lots of close but no cigar kinds of...
Okay, well, so somebody emailed me and said that they had heard that when Motorola comes to the ACB convention, they were going to have an accessible cell phone.
They may be buying the Ericsson. I mean, that may be it. There's another, as you remember, maybe a year ago or so, we had a company in Canada that was basically telling us that it was only a couple of weeks away from releasing the operating system of the future for cell phones that was totally accessible, yet we never heard from them after about 3 weeks. So we're pretty skeptical about anything until we see it, have it right in our hands. So I don't really know. I mean, I hope they come with an accessible phone. That would make life a lot happier for all of us.
Do you think that the FCC has handled this as well as they might? I mean, I just don't recall now when these regulations were ultimately passed, but it's been a while and nothing much seems to have happened in this area at all.
Well, it's a different FCC than it was under the President Clinton's administration.
Yes.
The chair of the commission, Chairman Powell, has essentially taken the tack that to the extent he doesn't have to regulate, he doesn't want to regulate. It's far better to allow business to compete and ultimately come up with a product for the consumer that works for everybody, all that sort of rhetoric. So I don't know that this commission is, I wouldn't classify it as terrible. I mean, they still have a basic sense of what they're doing there, and I think they want to comply with what their job is. But they're not. They're hardly what one would call an activist FCC.
All right, let's talk to area code 401. Hello, you're speaking with Charlie Crawford.
Hi, Jonathan. Nick Zamorelli. How you doing?
Very well, thanks.
Congratulations on your Access Award. I just read that email.
Well, we appreciate that. Thanks very much.
It's well deserved, and it's about time. And you are Of course, you know, in the year or 2 years or so that I've been listening to ACB Radio, you have been a real inspiration to me, and it's about time that you're getting your just desserts.
That's very kind of you. And do you have any tough questions for Charlie?
Well, yeah, the question I have, and it's wonderful that someone is taking this up. AudioVox, I guess, drew the short straw because Dr. O'Day happened to purchase an AudioVox phone. Had it been another company, I suppose it would have been that other company that would have been named in the suit. But let's assume that this goes to a place where we all want it to go, and we have an accessible cell phone platform at some point, which, as you know, Jonathan, has been a pet peeve of mine for a while now. Assuming we get there, what are we to do about price? I also noticed in checking my email that on main menu this week you're going to be reviewing PacMate. Well, PacMate costs almost $2,600. I see that as pricing something like that completely out of existence for many blind people, probably most blind people. Are we going to meet a similar fate with regard to the pricing of an accessible cell phone when and if it occurs?
Yeah.
I should state in fairness that it's not as much of an issue for me if it costs $300 or $400 or something. I can do that because I'm fortunately gainfully employed, but as you know, the same cannot be said for most blind people.
Well, that's an excellent question. The good news is that under the regulation, every accessible phone within a range of the prices available to the average person must be there. So, for example, if you have the cheap model, say $100, that will do X, Y, and Z, then there should be, and there are five models within that line, then one of those models has to be accessible. The next step up might be the mid-range or the supermodel at $200, same difference, and on and on and on, so that in each class of or line of production, there has to be at least one cell phone or one piece of equipment that's accessible under the regulation. That's part of the complaint, and that's why we're asking for that. With regard to the cost of blindness-specific products, I'm sure we're both pretty upset about that. I mean, I've always, essentially gone crazy over the fact that blind people are expected to pay $3,000 for something everybody else buys for $1,000 or less.
Oh, Charlie, let me tell you, I bought my wife a PDA, not this past Christmas, but the Christmas before, and it was about $500.
Yeah.
And, that's expensive enough. But she loves the thing. Now, why in the world are we going to pay, five times that?
Right.
it's unconscionable to me.
Well, and the interesting thing about that is that...
And impossible for most people.
Yeah, I mean, if a lot of the solutions to accessibility are really things that could be incorporated into the operational guts of the off-the-shelf product. And it's just a question of moving away from this notion of somehow we having special needs to an understanding that our needs and the needs of the everyday user are the same.
I don't think there's any question about it. I mean, my whole and I've written letters to Nokia and Motorola, and one of the things that I always say in sending them a letter or an email is, look it, if you have a cell phone that has the capability of announcing a call as it comes in with a voice tag that you've put in, so you're not, it's not announcing a phone number, although perhaps it could, it's announcing a name that you have stored, that the end user has stored in the phone, so that as you're driving, you don't have to look down to see who it is that's calling because it's audible.
You're absolutely right. Yeah. That's where we need to get. We need to get to a point where the average product has the built-in accessibility. Then we can ask all those talented people out there who make special equipment for blind people to really get to work on things that, that we may actually need beyond the some device that a sighted person would not necessarily use. But like, for example, a color tester. I mean, there's that $600 thing that I bought. Keeps telling me that everything is, what is it now, gray with shades of purple, no matter what the color is. So there's a long way to go in that. But, I mean, the point is that there are some things that, that could be well-engineered and work for us that may cost some extra money. And then we get into the issue of, well, there ought to be some way of subsidizing the cost for those people who can't afford it. But back to the cell phones, I mean, there's no reason why we shouldn't have built-in accessibility.
Is it reasonable to expect this sometime within the foreseeable future, or is this a pipe dream?
The complaint is asking for June 30th of 2003.
I'll ask again.
It's quite possible because the software is there. All they need to do is port that into U.S. models and then and do the coding that needs to happen, but I don't think that that's a major challenge if they want to do it. And then finally, I think it's eminently possible for them to start shipping stuff in the summer.
Well, I congratulate you on the position that you're taking on this. I hope that it's something that does come to fruition. Just a thought as I get ready to go here. As you both have probably heard, we in Rhode Island are dealing with a horrific tragedy here. With regard to a nightclub fire that's about just a few miles from my home that claimed now 97 lives and injured well over 100. And I just want to state publicly to anyone that's listening that my thoughts and prayers go out to all of those families. I'm a school teacher. We're coming back from vacation tomorrow. I don't know what kind of impact this is going to have in the several buildings that I work in, but I do know it's going to have and has had a widespread impact all over our state because, of course, we're the smallest state in the union. And my thoughts, as I said, and prayers are with the families and with the entire community that is the state of Rhode Island. We're really dealing with this. It's obviously it's on a much smaller scale, but this is our 9/11, and it's unfortunate. And I would hope that that you would all join me in extending thoughts and best wishes to all the families that have been affected and to everybody here in the entire state.
Well, you know, our prayers are certainly with them, and the tragedy of this, tragic enough as it is that ACB has a source in England that produces what's called Sound Alert, and Sound Alert produces a broadband sound during emergencies that will immediately, whether you're sighted or blind, because the room's full of smoke, so you can't see anything, Sound Alert points the person directly in the direction of where the exit is so that people would find the exits as easy as getting to them because they'd know exactly where they were. That system has been tested on ships with fake fires, and over 50% of the people who would have otherwise died lived. So it's a tragedy that it happened. It's another tragedy that we just haven't gotten this system in the United States yet.
We're so behind on whether it's cell phones or whether it's means by which to protect life. There are so many. We have a tendency here in the United States, and Jonathan, you probably have seen it in New Zealand, that we tend to think, you know, that we're the end all be all. Sometimes I think we are the greatest country in the world. I think we'll continue to be, but we have so much work to do in so many areas. And that's why the good work that you're doing and that Dr. O'Day is doing is very much appreciated by me and I know by so many others. And good luck to you and thank you both for talking with me.
Thanks, Nick. I appreciate the call. Okay. This is Blind Line, and incidentally, if you do want to hear about the Sound Alert system, there was a presentation at last year's ACB convention in Houston. And you can hear that in the archives with Dr. Deborah Withington. Very interesting it was. Good dinner it was as well, as I recall. Was that a very strange outback place?
We haven't invented the ultimate antacid yet, but the dinner was good. I should also mention, while we're talking about evacuations, that ACB has endorsed a evacuation kit that's not being sold directly to the public, but through insurance companies. And that kit is for intelligently planning evacuation procedures for people with disabilities. And ACB participated in the development of the blindness part of it. And I think that, the whole thing that happened in Rhode Island, certainly 9/11, the other tragedy that happened in the Chicago area a couple of weeks ago, all point to the fact that it's always better to be safe than sorry. And so we're doing what we can to promote the appropriate environmental access or egress for people who are blind in emergencies, so that people don't end up getting hurt where there's no need for them to have been hurt.
We're speaking with Charlie Crawford, and if you'd like to give him a call before we let him enjoy the rest of his evening, area code 212-812-2800 is our number. That's 212-812-2800. Then you get the spider fan moan. Spider phone man. Haven't had enough sleep lately, waiting for this baby. You get the spider phone man asking you for a conference code, and it's 0480-5512. 0480-5512. Does Chairman Powell have a point? Do we as blind people generally not use our clout as a market force enough in terms of all clubbing together and going to a cell phone manufacturer and saying, look at all of these millions of blind people who would buy a cell phone if you would only produce an accessible one? Do we tend to go for litigation too readily?
You want to restate that again? I was distracted by something.
Well, that's all right. I was just wondering whether you think that maybe there is a view out there that we go for litigation too readily, that we don't use our clout in the marketplace clubbing together.
I think we have to be honest about that. I mean, all the public relations things say that, there's this big community of disabled people out there in general and blind people in particular that have a certain level of economic clout. Well, that's true, but it's a question of scale. If you're a company and you have 100 million people and one half of 1% of them are blind, and you're in a rush to get your product out the door so it competes with everybody else's product, and you realize that, you might get in trouble with these accessibility laws, but ultimately, if you make a few hundred million dollars out of this product, you can afford the litigation and hire a press person to say how sorry you are. That the economic clout argument only makes limited sense. In niche markets where there is a more narrow amount of people who would be interested in buying a particular product, and that product is of high importance or usage to blind people, then the argument might hold more water. But I think in large measure, the question is more of a civil rights nature, vis-a-vis whatever you buy should be accessible versus thinking the market argument's going to work. Because if it did, we wouldn't have any laws.
Let's talk now to area code 612. Hello, you're speaking with Charlie Crawford.
Yes, good evening. It's Rebecca Cragness calling.
Hi, Rebecca.
Hey. I'm calling for a couple of reasons. And I had a phone call, so pardon me if any of this is repeat. The first thing I want to ask is that I'm on a major phone company, pretty major phone company in the state. And I'm not going to name the company, but I'm on a board for people with disabilities and seniors. I warned them about this, that this was coming. I sent out the press release on Friday when I got it. I forwarded it to them. What else should I be doing?
Well, you've done everything you can do. You can lead the horse to water, right? But, if it's not going to drink, then something's going to have to happen to force it to drink. And that's all you can do. I mean, you know the ropes as well as I do, right?
Okay, one more question for you, and then I'll let you go. Is this going to affect any funding for ACB Radio? Because I realize that Verizon does some of your funding.
Ah, you asked a sensitive question. I don't think so. I mean, there are a couple of reasons for that. One is ECB doesn't make any bones about the fact that we are an advocacy organization, that our first obligation is to improve the lives of blind people, so that anybody who does business with us in any way has to understand that operating principle. Secondly, the nature of the corporation we're talking about in this case, Verizon Wireless is kind of like a, it's part of Verizon, but it's not. It has a direct line communication with the president of Verizon, but it's not really integrated at any other level with the rest of the company, so that it's very possible that the social consciousness of Verizon in general, which is pretty good, has not filtered into Verizon Wireless, which is pretty bad. So, in that
any people,
sense,
any way of getting those people together?
Well, I think this will.
All right.
This will cause them to ask questions. Like, why are they doing this?
Yeah. Okay.
Rebecca, Verizon. Let me just say one more thing about this.
Sure.
They have a phone center in Massachusetts that essentially is dedicated to the extent there is accessible equipment, making stuff available to people with disabilities. So three cheers for Verizon, and it's just too bad that Verizon Wireless hadn't got the message.
With the same situation here. I have a company who has a center just like that, but yet I can't seem to get this message across.
No, I was just going to ask you about that. I'd like to explore this this board you're on, because here in New Zealand I was on a similar thing by the sounds of it, which they called the Special Needs Advisory Panel for one of our telecommunications companies. And I found it actually quite compromising, because you would sit there, and instead of making a difference, even though you thought you might be able to, what you actually do is sit there and listen to their spin about why they're not doing half the things that they ought to be doing. And I wondered how your experience had been with being on such
I'm experiencing a lot of that, and I'm actually fighting a lot of that. And if they don't like it, because somehow I've been made co-chair, and they don't, I've got a couple of other people with me, but unfortunately I'm the fighter. I'm the one that's saying stuff, and unfortunately a lot of people are really happy to just go and listen and not really do much of anything.
Yeah, that's it's always a balancing act between figuring out the people who essentially are more than sympathetic to your issues but actually get it, and then the extent to which they can operate effectively within their own corporation to make a change, and how much use you can be to them in terms of support. And sometimes you need to make decisions that say, well, even though there are people who are, who are sympathetic to our issues, they're not really able to make a difference in this company. So the only way to get the attention of the decision makers is to sue them, and so we do it.
Yeah, well, that's crossed my mind a time or two. But for now, I'll just keep fighting, and then when my time's done, then, you know, if they still haven't done anything, then, I'll try another course. I think a lot of it, too, a lot of my frustration is getting the fire lit underneath some of the other people sitting in that room.
But yeah, that's
saying,
it.
Why are you putting up with this?
Yeah, well, why are they? It amazes me that people are so willing to accept the second-class, mediocre access that we have and somehow think that blind people should spend their lives learning clever workarounds that are generally only available to the tech-savvy. See, at the moment with cell phones, the degree of technological literacy or competency for a blind person to use even anything remotely beyond the basic receiving and sending a call is far greater than the degree of technical competency required of a sighted person.
Yes.
Well, it's interesting. Janina Sejka from AFB, who is, Nerd of the Year, is probably one of the most savvy and facile people with cell phones that I've ever met. And she has designed in her cell phone a series of different rings, so she sort of knows who's calling just by the ring thing makes.
Yeah, I've done that too, yeah.
Now, that's great, but, not all of us are Janinas or Jonathans. Maybe your name has to begin with a J.
Well... Huh? Yeah, and the thing is too, Charlie, that only works with the people who you know are going to call you regularly. You still don't, if you get a surprise call from someone who you haven't programmed in, you're denied the access to that information.
Right, that's true. And even though, she's gotten to that level of self-made accessibility, clearly she understands as well as you do that the universe of options available to everybody else are never going to be available to us unless a direct system of access is incorporated into the equipment, or as you say, there's a network-based solution. But there's got to be a solution, and we have spent over 4 years, talking to companies and trying to cajole them and work with them on the advisory boards and everything else to get to a point where we have accessibility. And what do we got? A nib on the five key. Sorry, that's not it.
A lot of the companies right now, at least from my experience, are saying it's an economic hardship to do this stuff.
Yeah. Well, that's their song and dance about it.
Yeah.
The reality is that because they've already invested millions in the ability to download these games and entertain users, they can use some of that kilobyte power inside the phone to process text and speech.
Amen.
Well, I appreciate your call, Rebecca, and when's the next CD coming out?
I don't know yet.
Oh.
I was hit by a car this week, so I'm
not
recovering.
Oh, my gosh. Are you all right?
Well, yeah, I have a concussion, and my dog got a little scratch. We haven't been out yet, but I had a concussion and went unconscious and everything else. So
that's horrible.
Oh, God.
Yeah, it was not fun.
We'll be thinking of you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
All right.
See you. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye.
Oh, goodness me.
We should have mentioned to Becky while she was on the call that, you know, hopefully we'll be able to turn this ACB store thing into a place where they'll be able to purchase, people will be able to purchase CDs from the people that place stuff on ACB Cafe.
Yeah, we're hoping to do that because we get so many inquiries about that, and it'll be a wonderful service to be able to link our listeners up with those artists.
Yeah, that'd be super.
Now, just one more call. This is your final boarding call if you want to talk to Charlie. Area code 212-812-2800 and then the conference code 0480-5512. And, of course, these boarding machines are making the rounds too. The world's getting worse, I tell you. What can we do, or what can people in the US do? Is it really just a case of sitting and waiting now to see how this complaint has played out?
I would suggest that anybody who has a serious interest in the outcome of this and are experiencing problems themselves, try to document what they've done to resolve the problem, the responses from the cognizant companies that have been involved, and then if we need to file more complaints, we're certainly willing to do that. We have two other ones ready to launch. If this one, if people start saying, well, this is an isolated incident, then we'll just make sure that they understand it's not isolated. But that's about the extent of it right now. Because the nature of this complaint will have the effect of affecting a positive effect on the class of blind people who want to use cell phones, it should carry the day as far as that's concerned.
I've got to ask you, given what happened to the video description issue, is there any chance that somehow these regulations, if they start to have some teeth, might be challenged in any way?
Well, litigation is part of the business strategy of a lot of companies these days, so you can never tell whether or not they would, either out of ignorance or out of some business case, decide that they want to go challenge this in court. I don't think that there would be an appeal of this because it's pretty nuts and bolts and pretty doable. The DVS thing, on the other hand, there was a legal argument that could be made, unfortunately, successfully in the court. During this time of constructionist law in our courts, but, you know, 15 years ago, they wouldn't have been able to win that case. So that's the luck of the draw. The good news about DVS is that we'll be on Capitol Hill. We've got friends up there. I think we'll have DVS mandated within the current congressional session.
All right, and just while I got you there, how did mid-year go, and how's it looking for Pittsburgh in July?
Well, we're getting a lot of interest from the membership about coming to the July convention. I don't know if there's anything magic about Pittsburgh, but it does seem to be attracting a lot of people. We're in the process of putting together the program for the convention this summer. Hopefully, we will once again be able to develop a program of immediate interest and relevance to the lives of our membership, and people will have a chance to not only not only see and hear what's going on around them in terms of developments relative to blindness, but also as ACB's mantra, I mean, have the ability to influence what we do as an organization to make sure that what we do in Washington is relevant to their lives wherever they live.
Very good. Well, that's great, and I appreciate you giving up some of your Sunday evening to chat with us. All the very best, and, you know, this is the issue that you're fighting with respect to cell phone access is actually something you're fighting on behalf of the blind of the world, really, or the Western world, because what happens in America and the makes and models that are produced there trickle down to other smaller markets. So there will be a lot of blind people outside the U.S. who are cheering you on from the sideline.
Well, let me just say that I think the Access Award from AFB for ACB Radio is a real testament, not only to your competence and your hard work at ACB Radio, but I think also the vision of a world community of blind people where, you know, what we can do for each other is far more important than what we can do in any individual country. So in that sense, I think ACB Radio is the glue that makes that work, and so we're real proud of you and what you've done.
Well, thank you for that. It's been a fantastic thing to be a part of, and I know that when we were starting to plan it, there was a suggestion we might call it Global Blind Radio, but then, of course, ACB quite rightly should have its brand on there because it's coughing up with the money. But it is really very global in its outlook, and we've got, when you look at all the interactive people and put them into the picture, we've got about 60 people in 8 countries working on it now, so it truly is global.
Right. Yeah, you'll be competing with all those, you know, WorldComs and everything.
Yeah, there you go. Oh, well, hopefully it's not to go the way that they did.
Hey,
well,
good luck with the baby.
Thank you. I just wish it would hurry up. Well, I appreciate your time, Charlie, and we'll keep in touch.
All right.
Okay, bye now.
Good night.
It's Charlie Crawford, the Executive Director of the American Council of the Blind, talking about cell phone access and a few other things. And now the forum is open. The floor is yours. Get it together, people. Join the revolution. If we as blind people can't unite about an issue so fundamental as this, the fact that the cell phone is more than just a tool to talk to people on now, it's becoming the universal personal communications device. The text, the information that you can now get on text messaging is absolutely amazing. The fact that when you, as I said at the beginning of the program, when you join a frequent flyer club, certainly in this country, you can automatically get texted whenever your plane is delayed. You can send a text message to a particular number on an airline with the flight number. So you dial, you punch in the number that you're texting to, and then you punch in the flight number. Within about 20 seconds, you are texted back with the information about that flight, i.e. whether it's on time or not. I was involved the other day. I took the kids to McDonald's, and there was a voucher there that you got with the burgers. Each burger you bought, or Happy Meal or something, you got a voucher. And, of course, it was in print. I said to my wife, "What's this voucher?" And she said, "It's a promotion. What you have to do is you scratch the little panel off on this voucher, and then it has a number, and you text the number to this particular number that they tell you to text it to, and then they'll text you back and tell you if you've won a prize." So I said, okay, let's do that, and I had my cell phone there. So of course the first thing I had to do was hand the cell phone over to my wife so that she could text the information and then see what was there. And it turned out I won a few things. Won some burgers and some fries and all of those good things that are just the thing for a weight-conscious person like myself. So I was at a board meeting actually quite late, and I thought, you know, I really could, there's a McDonald's close by, and I thought I really could use a burger. And I knew that I had this information on my phone entitling me to the burger, but do you think I could remember how to get it out of there? It's just bizarre. And if we as blind people can't unite on this question of access to cell phones, then frankly, I just wonder whether we will ever get it together on anything. To me, this is just so cut and dried. Area code 617, hello.
Hello, Jonathan. Brian Charleston.
Hello, Brian. How are you? I was thinking of you today.
Well, you should be, because I was really honored the other day to be the ACB person to stand up at the Vision Loss in the 21st Century Conference and accept the Access Award on behalf of ACB Radio.
Well, I was just so thrilled to hear that.
I have it here in my lap as I speak to you.
Oh, yes. Well, what's it like?
A wonderful walnut base to it with a brass plate across the front that reads AM, that is Cap Cap AM period, short for American, Council of the Blind 2003 in brass with kind of a black background to the braille dots and to the print letters. And then standing upright from that base is a 5x7x1 inch slab of crystal with the AFB logo engraved on the back side of the crystal with the legend Equal Access and American Foundation for the Blind on it.
Gosh, that
so
sounds
that
beautiful.
I get a chance to represent that to you when you come to Pittsburgh.
Well, that just sounds really beautiful. That I didn't realize it was so elaborate and crystal and everything. That's wonderful.
It's a very nice piece of work. I'll send you a copy of the tape. I've asked them to send me a copy of the tape of the presentation so you can play it on the radio for all of those ACB radio fans and workers out there.
Yeah, there's a lot of them. A great team. Well, I was just so thrilled that you were the person who could do it because, you know, we go back all the way to those beginning planning meetings when we were working out how it would all happen and just starting off with that one stream. And
it starts out with one and then look what comes of it. And believe me, ACB very much appreciates the work of all those people around the globe that make the ACB radio family happen. I was introduced by Tom Sullivan, who is a blind actor. He's had a couple of movies out and done quite successfully. He's been playing guest parts on all of the major U.S. sitcoms and those kind of things over the years.
Right.
Graduate of Perkins School for the Blind. He did the intro, and then I got up there and had an opportunity to say thank you to all of those, that growing number of ACB Radio financial sponsors.
Yes, indeed.
And shortly thereafter, the head of CNI got up and spoke with me while we were doing those wonderful photo ops.
Oh, yes.
That entities like to do, and thanked me for mentioning their latest support of ACB Radio.
Well,
and of course, AFB is very proud to be associated with it as well.
I think it's taken us a while, actually, Brian, because while I understand and thoroughly applaud and support the fact that ACB wanted its brand on ACB Radio, and we didn't in the end go ahead and call it Global Blind Radio, I think we had to live down a concern that perhaps ACB Radio was going to be simply a mouthpiece of ACB, and in fact I think we've now set a standard of kind of being like the BBC of the blind community of covering issues in an open and transparent way, and we've had to win people's respect over the years about that.
Well, one of the great things about being up on the podium that day was, in addition to ACB Radio receiving an award, so did Bookshare, which is a effort that I find incredible and very laudable. And I spoke with Mr. Fruchterman about his project, and your listeners should know that he's put high priority on internationalizing Bookshare.
I'm delighted to hear that.
Currently you have access to all of the public domain material, but more importantly, a number of the companies that produce books on a world market basis are starting to show some interest in sharing that access, not just to U.S. citizens, but to citizens of the world. Most recently, I guess, the major producer of computer-based manuals and tutorials and those kind of things has given carte blanche to Bookshare. So I was pleased to share the podium with them. Also, we shared the podium with the ACB affiliate in California and the NFB affiliate in California, who accepted an award jointly for their combined effort to create a separate agency for blind people in the state of California.
Oh, that's tremendous, isn't it? Yeah.
It was quite the afternoon that this was going on.
Wow, I'm certainly...
Again, you know, when you think, does ACB Radio only, is it only the mouthpiece of ACB? It is ACB and much, much more than any one political philosophy, because there's an awful lot of between the blind community here and around the world.
Well, you know, one thing that I was really thrilled about kind of, to come on to AC is a trend that we can understand a little bit.
I think it's more than an attempt to really make, and I think that it already is. I should extend a second hello to you. I had dinner night before last with William Rowland.
Oh, right. Yes, I caught up with him. Yeah.
And he mentioned he had had supper or a meal with you just not too long before that.
Yes. Yes, the agency I'm chairman of held a meeting here because the table officers were meeting in Auckland, New Zealand, and so we put on a dinner for those guys, and it was good to catch up with them and also to contrast how many people knew of ACB Radio and were really interested in knowing more in 2003 compared with how many knew of it when the General Assembly was on in 2000.
Oh, in 2000, I remember going over to the meeting of Blind Citizens Australia, and, you know, we talked about it. We kind of, Paul Edwards and I stood up and we spoke about it a bit during their meeting, and everybody said, oh, what a neat idea. and now, you name a person.
Yeah.
I mean, it's everywhere. And again, while I wish that this award had come earlier, it certainly shows the respect of the blindness system, if you will, to this. And this was an international conference, and you'll be hearing more from people around the world as a result of this award. People sometimes think awards are just nice little pieces of walnut, or in this case, crystal, but it means a great deal more. It gives you a chance to get in front of real decision makers and make them understand what we're all about and become involved in that process.
Well,
I wouldn't be surprised if we heard from a couple of other organizations that wanted to become financial sponsors and hopefully be able to start producing a bit of content. I was stopped in the hallway one afternoon during the conference by a lady who said her 14-year-old son is a big devotee of the internet and audio content, and she's going to be in touch with me to help her son become a member of ACB Radio. He says he has all the gear ready to do it to become a personality on the show, so I'm looking forward to that.
Oh, he sounds like a good interactive DJ. Speaking of content, whatever happened to your much-anticipated program?
Yeah. They all say that.
Yeah.
By as often as I get a chance to call you, you must know how little time I have that is actually my own.
Oh.
The trouble of listening through all of your step-by-steps and bought the necessary gear at this end to make it happen. The problem is committing myself to a specific time on any kind of regular basis to pull it off. I've been trying to convince Paul Edwards and Jay Dowdnick to join me and together share a time slot, and we would do something called PB&J. Now, I don't know whether the world understands those three letters, but here in the United States, that's peanut butter and jelly.
Oh, is that what it stands for? No, I didn't know that.
PB&J.
You've gone all faint on me.
Oh,
that's better.
Am I any better now?
Yeah, much better. Yeah.
Cell phones for you, Jonathan.
Yeah, inaccessible ones. That'd be good. And in fact, I'm thinking that I should threaten Jay with coming a little bit earlier to Pennsylvania so that I can descend on his house and show him how to do this. Take him through one step at a time.
Well, he and myself and Paul would agree to get together with you if you get a little bit early.
Okay.
We'll go to Jay's together and make it happen.
Oh, let's do that. Let's do that. I'll we're on. We'll do that.
I'll give Paul a call. I'm going to be going down to St. Lucia in 2 weeks for the North American region meetings, and unfortunately Paul's not going to be able to join me there. But are you going to be able to make it down to South Africa for the WBU General Assembly?
At this stage, I'm planning to be there, yes.
Well, let's try to see if we can work out some financial support for you in ACB by then. Hopefully our finances will be a clearer path by then so that we can come up with the necessary scratch. But that's one of the things I talked to William about, was this opportunity to broadcast the WBU by way of ACB Radio.
Yes, I had a chat to him about that briefly, and it would be a huge project because you'd have to do it in multiple languages. But having pulled off a couple of successful convention broadcasts now, I've got no doubt that we could do it if we were given the resources to do it.
I agree. Well, keep up the good work.
Thank you, Brian,
and
I'm so glad you received it. Yep, and I appreciate you taking the time to call and let us know what it was all like, too.
Well, let me tell you, Jonathan, I wish that, well, eventually we'll try to get you as much of the audio of the program as possible. Ray Charles received a Lifetime Achievement Award. Quincy Jones was there to introduce him. We also heard from Maya Angelou, who was our guest speaker on the opening session night. So it was quite a powerful experience within and surrounding blindness and excellence of humanity as well.
It sounds great. Thank you so much. We'll keep in touch.
Bye now.
Okay, bye-bye. And that's Brian Charlson, fresh back from the AFB Access Awards and a conference that was associated with them. Sounds like a lovely award. Hello to area code 210.
Yes, you there?
I am.
Oh, very good. I was listening to your guest you had on earlier.
Yes.
And I just want to say thank you for allowing the opportunity for us to hear their views, your views. And I know there's one of the things that was brought out in the conference that... you know, the possibility of using networks to access the information. Currently, I use a cell phone, which I'm on right now, and through Sprint Communications.
Yep.
One of the things that I find, if they were to even go that route, which I could live with if it was completely accessible and allowed me to use all of the features on the phone, I wouldn't have a problem with that, except, and I take exception to this because, of course, most of us, you know, can use the web. Well, Sprint, for example, and maybe I shouldn't have said Sprint, but I did, so that's beside the point.
That's okay.
Their website is, while it is accessible, it's not the friendliest website on planet Earth. A lot of graphics, but it is doable. My biggest complaint is not only should it be a bit more accessible, more often than not, especially on the weekends and in the evening, you can't get online there. So what good is that going to be if it's not made accessible 24 hours a day except during maintenance?
What actually happens? Is it overloaded or do they take it down or what?
The system, they'll say you can't access the web page. It's not available now.
Okay.
Check your web browser.
Yeah, so you're getting a 404.
With that.
Yeah. Well, that's that.
I mean, it's intermittent is what it is. And when it's down, it's down and you can't do anything about it except, you know, make changes through your voice, and you really do a much better job using the web because then you can add names to your address book and so forth and so on, and it just functions a whole lot better. This is what they call their voice touch.
Right.
Which works fine when it works.
We had a service here called WordUp, and it sounds like it's quite similar to what you have, and it was a voice portal. It offered all sorts of things like news and things, yeah. and also a big phone book thing, so you could go on the web and you could add as many entries as you wanted.
That's right.
Right. And then they took it away. And when the blind people of New Zealand went to them and said, why did you take this away? They said, well, because hardly anybody was using it because they've all got WAP phones over here. And they can... So, you know, too bad, basically.
Well, that's kind of my... You know, that's kind of my concern here. And when it's up, it's great. But when it's down, you can't hardly do anything. And you can't update your book or any of this stuff. Now, they're trying to make this more accessible... Even on landlines, I just recently had this service put on my landline. But you still do not have access to all the other features on the phone. You know, and if they do this, if this were a solution, I hope somebody's listening that's in a position to make that count. It has to be something that's accessible all the time. Doesn't do you any good if all of a sudden the phone comes and says you can't access your features because everything's offline.
Well, I think that, and from my limited reading of the American market, it seems to me that text messages in the last year or so have finally started to reach the kind of critical mass in the US that they have in Europe and my part of the world. And I think as more and more services of real use are available to US residents using text messaging, blind people are going to get even more and more frustrated about the lack of progress on cell phone access.
Listen, I won't keep you. I want to also just wanted to say thank you. A friend of mine introduced me to your programming in the last 6 or 8 months, and I have to tell you, I have thoroughly enjoyed it.
Oh, well, thank you for that. I appreciate it.
And we'll be listening.
Good on you. Thank you, and do call again.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye now.
Bye-bye. This is Blind Line on ACB Radio Mainstream. I'm Jonathan Mosen, and we're taking your calls. I do believe the board is free at the moment, so if you'd like to give us a call on your cell phone... maybe you'll get straight through and there'll be no waiting. It's area code 212-812-2800. That's the number, area code 212-812-2800. And when you're asked for a conference code by Spiderphone, who very generously donate their facilities to make this happen, it's 0480-5512. That's the conference code, 0480-5512, and the board is free. You want to talk about cell phone access? I suppose, given the recent developments, you might like to just sort of reminisce about ACB radio. Sometimes it is amazing to just stop. I don't like stopping very much. But sometimes it is amazing to stop and just look at where it's all come from. It's just quite amazing. And that's thanks to a lot of very dedicated people who put a lot of great programming together. I should remind you, while we're waiting for the calls to be torrentially coming in here, look at that. I don't need to remind you about anything because it looks like we're getting another call coming in now. Just bear with me. Sing a song while we find the button to press. And now, we say hello to area code 361. Welcome to Blind Line.
Hey, Jonathan. How's everything going?
Oh, good. That's Marvin, is it?
That's Marvin.
I recognize that face anywhere.
You know what? I found the cell phone with Charlie Crawford really interesting because I also use the same cell phone company that the previous caller there in San Antonio uses.
Yeah.
And, you know, just to be frank about it, danged if I'm going to pay an extra $10 or whatever it is a month to have, you know, a service, you know, that to blind people would be even more usable than anybody else, you know.
But the scary thing is that there are blind people who seem to want to settle for this sort of mediocrity. That's what freaks me out.
Yeah, that's really strange.
It is.
And I'll tell you a really quick ACB radio story.
Oh, please.
When I went to get my dog, my Zarek dog that I have now, I happened to be sitting in the lounge at Seeing Eye talking to a group of people, and a guy walked up and he said, "Are you Marvin Rush?" And I stood up and shook his hand. I said, "Yes, I am," you know. And he said, "Well, I recognize your voice from ACB radio."
Yeah.
And come to find out, it was Lynn White who called Blind Line quite often.
Yes.
And so that was really intriguing to me that, you know, he recognized my voice from ACB radio work.
I've heard a number of people to whom that's happened, and it's quite flattering, I'm sure. And because my voice and my accent are so distinctive, you know, it's amazing to just wander around at convention time and you just open your mouth to make the slightest utterance and all of a sudden, you know, there they all are. It's great that people listen and recognize your voice and things. And, how did your folk connection go?
Well, it went great. I just enjoyed it. You know, the 4 a.m. thing is not that fun here, but
no.
You know, when you come, you know, back from a long absence, then you have to start at the bottom of the totem pole, as it were, you know. So,
yeah.
It went really well. Once I got the coffee pot going and some of the stuff out of the coffee pot in me, then I was a lot better off.
Very good. Well, it's good to have you back on the ACB radio, and I appreciate that story, too. And interesting feedback, too. A number of people wrote and said they enjoyed your XM radio review.
I got a lot of that, too. I got several people saying they really enjoyed it. It was really fun to put it together. Because to get the XM radio through my mixer and then send to my computer, I had to use my FM transmitter to send it from the back up to my CC radio, which was plugged into my mixer. And that's how it got there.
Yeah, well, that sounds very ingenious. Well, you have a good evening, and we'll look forward to the show later this week.
Exactly. Friday morning, 10 to 12.
Yeah, good on you. Have a nice evening.
All right.
Okay.
See you later.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
If anyone happens to know whether there's America's Cup racing on at the moment, New Zealand and Alinghi are racing, are supposed to be racing in race four, but it's been postponed three times due to lack of wind, and it's supposed to be on now, and I'm dying to know whether it is, and hopefully whether we're winning. Area code 815, hello.
Hello, Jonathan.
Hello.
This is Chris.
Chris, how's it going?
Oh, all right, man. Excellent. Just wanted to call in and say hello, and congratulations on the award. I read the email earlier.
Thank you.
On ACB Radio and all that, and that's what I wanted to call in. And oh man, I remember the first day that ACB Radio ever went on the air, and I know you do too because I remember you were telling about us that. And
going to the fish and chip shop. Yeah.
Oh yeah, and for me it was in the morning, and I remember hearing about it and was really excited. And the first thing I think was on there was an old-time radio show, and I think a Blind Line episode.
Yeah, we did what you would call a soft launch, and a few people were disappointed. They sort of said, well, where's the big bang and everything? But no, we did a very soft launch to begin with, and just started very slowly and gradually and built up.
Mm-hmm. And it was sort of like, and then eventually we went to the three channels and now four and all that. And
that was on the 10th of April. The 10th of April 2000 was when we turned all that on.
That's right, and all the main menus are still there.
Hard
to believe.
Yeah, you can actually go back and hear that first main menu in the introduction.
I did, actually, a couple of days ago, to be honest. Heard that thing that DJC did with Joy Tilton about the talking microwave.
That's right.
And
I've got one of those now.
Oh, do you?
It's a pain in the neck. I mean, in some ways it's useful, but you open the door and the thing says, door open. And I think, well, I may be blind, but I'm not stupid. I know the door's open because it's open. And then you shut the door and it says, door closed.
Yeah, sort of like the cars we have here. I'm not sure if you guys have them over there, but there are talking cars we have, and it says, your door is ajar. I'm like, well, it's more of a door, actually.
I don't have friends rich enough to have talking cars.
Oh, man.
And we haven't got a talking car because it's probably not practical. That we've got one of those, a Nissan Serena. It's one of those big things that with lots of seats that transport heaps of people.
Oh, really?
Yeah, well, because
we've got
an expanding family, you see. So
Next, Mosin Baby is on its way.
Well, it's just about here. It could be any day now, any hour now. No man knoweth the hour.
Wow, that's just amazing. I remember when David was born.
Yeah, me too.
And I remember that when you had another Blind Line, and the whole family was in there.
Yeah.
So. And the one thing I wanted to know, and I don't know if you can answer this on the air, because I know that there are probably secrets going on and other things that you don't want to talk about, but where do you see, or where would you like to see ACB Radio within the next, like, 3 or 4 or 5 years?
Ah, well, it's very interesting that you ask that question, because we have been doing a bit of strategic planning in the last few days, actually.
Uh-huh.
I must admit that because of the dot-com meltdown and the general slower economic growth and technological growth, that we haven't seen the rollout of really portable broadband devices to the extent that I would have expected. You know, especially in Europe and some other parts of the world, cellular companies have invested huge amounts of money in 3G licenses and are now having real difficulty finding revenue models that can recoup the investment. So that's all very problematic. But I think that we will endeavour to offer more programming to diversify our sources, so that we might look at possible satellite distribution, and also to put things on a model where broadcasters who produce quality program can hopefully receive some remuneration for their efforts, and so we are actually making active progress on those issues as we speak. So,
well, that would be very groovy if you guys could get out there, and I'd like to get more into the fetish community as well, because I think that they would really enjoy our radio station and what we're doing and these other networks that we've got. And I mean, for right now, I think it's very popular in the blind community, and that's not a problem. I mean, everybody, if you listeners are listeners, and I don't have a problem with that, but I'd really like to see, you know, more sighted people get into it too, because to me, radio is radio, you know?
Absolutely. Especially stuff like interactive, where it's pretty general.
Oh, yeah.
The other thing that is a really high priority from my point of view is non-English speaking programming, which will probably involve a fifth channel.
Really?
Yeah.
I think that would be... Now, we have, of course, we have Edwin with the Chinese Golden Jukebox. I heard that a couple nights ago, and that's a pretty cool show.
It is. It is. And, you know, there's lots of room for Spanish and French spoken word content about blindness as well, and other languages. And that, when channel number 5 comes, that will be channel number 5. It will be a foreign, non-English speaking stream.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Very cool. So... would there be a name for that? I don't know.
Well, I haven't got one. I'm sure we could think of a very good name for it. We could...
ACB Radio International or something
Like
that.
Well, maybe, very well, maybe, very possibly. Yeah.
Yeah. Would you ever imagine that it would have all gone this far? When you started, did you think it would go this far?
Oh...
I know that's a tough question to answer, but...
I'm just trying to remember. I think I hoped it would. Yes, I think I hoped it would. But, of course, it was when we started in 1999, it was very different climate. I mean, everything was free or advertising supported. And so you could get a lot of stuff for free. What interested me was that as the dot-com bubble burst, and, for example, Live365, you know, stopped being free to organizations and, what else? Oh, we had those free internet telephony services, which means that I could make a free call using, say, what was that thing called? Delta 3.
Delta 3. And all the other ones.
Oh, and there were other ones as well. And they all gradually dried up, and then ultimately we were left with just the free calling and MSN Messenger, and ultimately that dried up. And anyway, so there were a whole lot of things that stopped being free progressively. And each time that happened, I thought, you know, this is just going to be the last straw for ACB. They're going to pull the plug. It's costing too much. But instead, they obviously saw the merits in what ACB Radio was doing, and we've moved to a model now where we are funded by an increasing number of corporate sponsors who believe in us as well. So we've sort of transcended the dot-com bubble in a way that I perhaps hadn't anticipated. So yeah, it's in some ways it's worked out like I hoped, and in other ways it's gone in very different directions.
Oh yeah, and I'm very happy to be part of it. I mean, I've got the two shows, you know, one right before yours, and I've got one on, it would be Friday, and it's a lot of fun for me to do. I've always, ever since I was 6 years old, I've always dreamed of being a radio personality, as they say.
Mm-hmm.
I've always been wanted to do this, and it's very rewarding. You wouldn't believe all the emails that I get from people, you know, just who happened to listen to the show, and they said, hey, thanks for all the cool music you play, and it's really rewarding for me.
Yeah, well, and I really hope that it will also help those people who have professional aspirations to continue to refine their talent and hopefully produce audition material that could get them into commercial radio as well. And I think, you know, when you see the amount of... collapsing and folding up that's going on in internet radio generally, the fact that we've had a set of standards which makes us an appealing product to sponsor has really proven the right strategy, because we're still here and continuing to become more and more healthy. So it's
absolutely. So, well, that's pretty much all I want to do. I wanted to say hi and
very nice.
Congratulations and best of luck to you and Amanda and the family on the upcoming addition to the family. And
yes, thank you for that.
I will catch you on the radio, as they say.
Okay, Chris, nice to hear from you. Thanks for that.
Okay,
and thanks for your part.
All right, man.
Okay,
thanks.
Bye. There you go. That's Chris Garstedt, the tune head, and of course also moderator of the Winamp for the Blind List. Well, the board is free if you'd like to give us a call. The revelry that we're all feeling here at ACB Radio over the award from AFB has sort of taken the sting a little out of the cell phone argument, but I don't want to do that necessarily. If you'd like to give us a call, please do, and discuss the issues. And please, if you have a different perspective from mine, I'd love to hear that. It's diversity is what it's all about. Area code 212-812-2800 is the number. That's area code 212-812-2800. And the conference code is 04805512. That's 04805512. And, of course, when we're thinking about ACB Radio and where we've come from, people hear the voices behind the microphones. and they're all great. And there are also some of those same voices, and perhaps one or two people who aren't very regular voices behind the microphone, also have done an enormous amount to make ACB's development possible, including people like Matt Campbell, who wrote the Supercast server. It's pretty cool when you can have somebody who volunteers for this project who can write stuff like that. Jeff Shang and Jeff Harris, and also, of course, Mark Mulcahy, who I don't think has made his debut on ACB Radio Interactive yet, but who has written the Supercast server. And one day I am going to, in fact, if given that we are reminiscing about ACB Radio and where it's come from, if Mark could actually work out how to ring Spiderphone, I don't think it's that. I mean, he's a, yeah, I should give him a hard time about the fact he can write all these amazing things and he can't ring Spiderphone. No, but actually, it's because he's got some problem with his long-distance carrier. But if Mark, if you can get on, it'd be great to talk to you about PRS, the new automation system that that Mark wrote and that we're now using, and that he spent hundreds of hours recently debugging. So there's a lot of people who need to be thanked and who need to take pride in this very satisfying and rewarding award. Let's go to area code 214. Hello, as they say.
Hello.
Hello. That's hello. French, you know, yeah. Is that Wayne from Texas?
Yes.
I recognize that face anywhere, too.
Yes. And as for Fussman, I'm calling on my cell phone.
Yeah, it sounds pretty bad, your cell phone.
Well, I don't know how long it'll hold up for, but anyway. I have an interesting ACB radio question for you.
Yes.
Mainly, have you thought of or looked into making the Blind Line archives or changing them so that people can download them and that kind of thing?
You should be able to do that now. You can just go to the FTP site and go into the archives and then choose Blind Line, and you can download all the Blind Line archives from the FTP site.
Okay, because I tried to do it through the web interface and get the save started as for one of the shows and got a message that said that that Internet Explorer couldn't access the link or some sort of error message.
I can't really explain that, but I mean, because it does work for me. I can log on to, but I don't use Internet Explorer as my FTP client. I use FTP Voyager, and I can go in and download any of those programs. Pretty much anything that we put on demand in that show's on demand section is all downloadable by listeners via FTP.
Yeah. Okay. No, I mean I went through the Internet Explorer web interface, since someone told me about it, I've gotten turned on a lot to FTP Explorer.
Yeah. It's okay.
Actually. So anyway, wondered if you had any ideas on a problem I'm having in Word, Word XP. Basically, when I go to the insert menu and the pictures and the clip art, I can do one search, or I can do a search for clip art that I want to insert. But then for some reason I can't get back to the search field to do another one, and wondered if there was a shortcut key or something.
I remember you copied me on a message about this today, and I thought, why is he telling me this? I don't know. To be honest, working with ClipArt is something I really have to do, and I don't think I've ever been into that particular dialogue ever since I've had Word XP, Word 2002, so I don't know the answer. But do you know, as far as I'm concerned, the blind Microsoft Word guru is Kathy Ann Murtha, and another person who knows a lot about it is Brian Hartgen as well.
All right.
You could hassle them.
Look them up, yeah. Well, the only reason I'm using the clip art, you know, and I don't use clip art either, except unless it involves putting it onto my website, is I'm in a desktop publishing class this semester, and it looks like we'll be dealing with a lot of pictures and that kind of thing. So I have to do it for one of my assignments. Otherwise, I wouldn't mess with it at all, you know. which I was out and put a picture in there. It's probably way too big, and the colors probably look awful, but it's in there.
Yeah, well, I wish you luck trying to work that out, man.
Yeah, and I'll leave you with this, but I'm hitting a milestone this week. I ordered, a couple days ago, ordered a copy of SoundForge.
Oh, I thought you were going to tell me you'd ordered a Pac-Mate for a minute. Okay, you've got SoundForge coming. Very good.
Yes. I got the SoundForge, and that's for dollars for the noise reduction plug-in, and ordered the FS tutorial, and...
Oh, have you? Oh, well, that's very good news. well, that's good. Well, I hope you enjoy that. I think you'll find it excellent. I'm actually going to do a review, having now put the Pac-Mate one to bed just about this new studio recorder from APH, which is very accessible and has got some very nice features for recording spoken word material and for working with it. Like, you can actually move forward by sentence and paragraph in a spoken word document.
Ooh.
Yeah. Cool. Cool it is.
Yes.
All right, well, I better move it along because they're stacking up here, but I always appreciate your call, and I hope you get the clip art thing sorted.
Yeah.
Okay.
Have fun.
You too, man.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Area code 781, hello.
Yeah, hi, John. This is Chris Pepple from Arlington, Mass. How are you?
Hi, Chris. How are you getting on?
Great. At least we got some rain this weekend, not any more snow. So.
Now, are you the person I see posting all those messages to Stream Ad?
No.
Oh, you're different. Okay, that's all right. Forget that then.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, have you heard any more about Betacom and the Screen Rover?
No, I haven't. You know, I haven't.
I did see that at the convention, and as a matter of fact, I ordered it in October of 2000 and got it, and the thing never worked.
Oh, man, because it wasn't cheap, was it?
$900, and the company paid for it. They've been very good about that kind of thing.
Hmm.
And we tried to deal with the company, and the programmer never called back. It was really a hassle. But I thought it would be a great idea if it had worked.
It was quite interesting. I mean, I was sitting at that table and using the... It was like a tactile mouse to move around, and you could feel... You could get a kind of a tactual, conceptual design of the screen.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, the speech part of it worked. That was very understandable, but the mouse, you just move it back and forth and nothing would happen.
Because, as I recall, it made kind of little bumps as it moved across lines and things.
Right, and if you come to, say, two windows, you're supposed to have like an elastic feel to it.
Yeah.
But it sounded to me like a very, a very good thing if it worked.
Well, you've jogged my memory because it's been a very long time since I've heard anything of it.
And the last time that I looked at their website, which was, maybe a month or two ago, it said that it was still for Windows 98 only, which, I mean, they're kind of behind the times.
Yes, that suggests that maybe... I mean, was there anywhere on the page that said when it was last updated?
No.
Yeah.
Well, yes, there was, and I don't recall. It had been updated, but I don't recall now what it was.
Oh. Well, what
but
we...
as far as Screen Roar itself, it said still for Windows 98, and that's... I said, wait a minute, we're already at 2000,
Yes, well, of course, since then we've had 2000, we've had Millennium, and we've had XP, so...
That's right.
Yeah. I'll see if I can dig any information out, because... as you say, it looked like it had a lot of potential.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed the review there on the about the Seeing Eye Dog. I thought that was very interesting.
Now, which one was this?
That was the one with Alan back in December. Alan.
Oh, sorry, Alan Harris. Yes.
Yes.
Oh.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm not a dog person myself, but I can understand. And, times have changed, like anything.
Well, I... wonder whether there's been any progress on that case, actually. I must try and find out.
I mean, would there be a reason for learning a cane before you'd learn to use a dog, or does it make any difference?
In my view, absolutely there is, because I think you don't want to become so dependent on the dog that if the dog is ill or something like that, that you lose your competency to travel around and navigate. I mean, imagine if you were in some sort of emergency situation and you just had to get around.
Right.
Cane is pretty low-tech, dependable mobility.
Yes.
So I think, and from what I could gather, GDUI has never said that you shouldn't have good prerequisite cane skills before you learn to use a dog. I think the
right.
question is whether, you know, if you do have good cane skills already, whether
sure.
the Iowa Department for the Blind program should be so flexible as to allow guide dog use in that particular program.
Yeah, and it sounded like Stephanie had already gone through the cane travel.
Yes, and
it was
difficult for Alan Harris, I think, because, and I do have a little sympathy as the chairman of New Zealand's blindness agency, you know, one is quite restricted in terms of what you can say about clients, so
so
he wasn't able or willing to go into the specifics of Stephanie's case.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much for your time, but I just thought I'd call.
Well, thank you for your call. I appreciate hearing from you.
All right, take care.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
Bye now.
Right, let's go through the calls. They're stacking up. We like them stacking up. Area code 801, hello.
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 It's Desiree.
It's who?
Desiree Vaughan.
Oh, well, very nice to hear from you, Desiree. How are you doing?
I'm doing good.
Excellent.
Yep, I have an older phone, and I have an older cell phone, and it's really a pain to use.
Yeah, well, at least it sounds slightly better than some of those horrible new digital ones.
Well, I'm not calling on a cell phone because it's more expensive to call.
Oh, I see, okay. Oh, yeah, well, that's very good. Yes, and so what's on your mind today?
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing what happens with this case, the cell phone case we mentioned earlier. Hopefully it works out, because that'll be great.
Yeah.
We'll have a cell phone that we can use.
So do you think it's you think they're doing the right thing by going for it?
I think so, yeah.
Very good. Yeah. Yeah, it's making a big difference. And you're on the air in about an hour and a bit, aren't you?
Yes, I am, as a matter of fact.
And you were on ACB Radio Interactive at the very beginning, I think.
I was.
There you go. Yeah. Oh, it's we're certainly come a long way.
It has. Well, you probably got lots of calls, too.
Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to call, and people can tune into Desiree's Music Box at, 4 UTC, so that's about an hour and a bit from now as we go live.
Yep.
Cool. Well, I hope they tune in and send you lots of cool requests.
Let's hope so.
Okay, Desiree, you have a good evening.
You too.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. Well, this is ACB Radio Interactive, and hello to this unknown caller.
Hello.
Hello there.
Hey, I just called to congratulate you on your award.
Thank you very much.
And I enjoy some of the programs that you have, like the main menu is really good, and what you have on Mondays pretty good, and I listen to Blindlined and.
Yeah.
That,
well, of course, those blind handyman guys are great, aren't they?
Yes.
They're cool.
I'm calling on a cell phone. I don't know if you could tell, but I can see a little bit, so it's accessible, as far as that goes. But I don't know of anything that would have speech output for like the menus and stuff like that.
So, is your vision such that you had to take particular requirements into account when you were shopping for a cell phone?
I can read some print, and that's about it.
Okay. There. So, because for those of us who have difficulty with, would you need like larger buttons or larger fonts, that kind of thing on the screen?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, we need, I set it for the largest font it has, and went with that.
Well, I appreciate you giving us a call, and do keep listening. We appreciate it.
Okay, well, thank you.
Okay. There you go. It's now 19 minutes away from the top of the hour. You're listening to Blind Line, and once again, the board is free, so if you'd like to give us a call and talk about cell phone access and, strategies, because let's face it, it may take a while before the world changes, and so we have to look at coping strategies. I'll tell you about my coping strategies. Let me give the number one more time, though, because we'd like to hear from you. Area code 212-812-2800. That's area code 212-812-2800, and the conference code 0480-5512. 0480-5512. Well, I guess what I do when I get a new cell phone, and I tend to change them quite frequently, I am, you know, a bit of a gadget junkie. And when there's a new cell phone coming out, I like that. So I sit down, and generally, even if you can get the manual in PDF, which is quite common, that's not a heck of a lot of help, because when they are telling you what to press, they generally display the graphic. And so you're reading the manual, and it's quite intelligible, and all of a sudden it says, press the bleep key, and it, you know, will just have graphic or something, if anything. So you're at a loss, even if you have memorized which key is which. So generally, you have to have a human reader go through the manual, and I make notes to program the ringer. You know, you push the menu key followed by 4 or 5 and 1 and 2, and because I tend to want to go for phones that do have a number system. A lot of them do these days, numbered menus, keyboard shortcuts. And there is increasing awareness of accessibility. I noticed that with Ericsson, there are a few little, Sony Ericsson, there are a few little interesting features creeping in now that are access-related. Some of them not very well thought out, but well-intentioned. For example, if I've put in an entry in the phone book and that person calls, it will actually speak the name of the person calling as you've recorded it in your voice tag, which is a nice feature, except it's very faint. You'd have to have it up against your ear at the right time, and of course the problem with that is it's also ringing its head off, so it's not a good idea to put it up against your ear. But as Charlie mentioned, you can, in some phones, have caller ID programmed in such a way that certain numbers in your phone book can receive a particular ring, so I know when my wife is ringing or whatever. So there are those coping strategies. But I suppose if we're looking at what constitutes accessibility, how do you define accessibility? I'd have to say that it would be the ability to pick up a cell phone you've never used before and traverse its menus with reasonable success and know what the menus say. Now, with the exception of the very expensive Nokia communicator and the TalkX software on top, there is nothing, to my knowledge, that will allow you to do that. And that is what this fight is about. And it is so critical that the US gets it right because of the number of phones that are made for the European US market and the flow-on effects that that will have in other markets. Well, when I look at our listener count, it's pretty good today, but the calls have dried up. So do give us a call. Monologues are not good. I'm certainly not Mr. Limbaugh. Is he still going? What's happened to Rush lately? Last I heard he had a cochlear implant, but I don't know whether he's still going or what the story is. But I'm certainly not long monologue type, so give us a call. Area code 212-812-2800. In fact, I don't think I've got anything in common with Rush at all. And the conference code is 0480-5512. That's 0480-5512. Don't forget that on main menu this week, we begin a two-part review. It's 4 hours in duration altogether. So it's more than a review. It's sort of like a demonstration, come tutorial type thing on the PacMate, the new portable personal digital assistant from Freedom Scientific. Should be interesting. I've got it right here, actually. See? I'll just hold it up to the microphone so you can get a good look at it. Here's the pack, mate. We'll just... There you go.
Today, move with arrows, activate with dot 8.
We were just finishing the review. But look at that. We have a call. Oh, yes, we do. So let's just get to that. It is area code... Oh, I bet I know who this is. It's the highly excellent area code 615. Good evening.
Hello there, Jonathan.
It's Dr. Killian.
And how is everything going?
Well, to be honest with you, I'm on a knife edge. I'm on the edge of my seat. I can't sleep. I'm just waiting for this baby.
Well, being on the edge of a knife has to be very uncomfortable. Those things are very thin.
It's very scary, man.
And they're also rather pointy.
Yes. Oh, undoubtedly it is. Yes.
Very pointy.
Now, what about your MSN Messenger business?
Oh, yes. I did sign up for a passport. I have not attempted to run MSN and try and sign in and see if it would work.
Okay, so you've got a passport. Yeah, that's right. So my understanding is you can get a passport, no problem. It's the Hotmail account where you have to enter that symbol.
Yeah, what I tried to do was go online to officially sign up, and most of the form was accessible until we got to the very last item.
Mm.
And it said to copy the number that's in this picture.
And that was for Hotmail, though?
No, it was not Hotmail. This was using my own address for MSN Messenger.
Well, I find that interesting, because I've signed up for lots of passports for people. I've never seen that.
It was exactly the same thing I dealt with Yahoo. Only there was no provision for accessibility in there.
Well, I'm going to try and have to find an excuse to set up another passport, because if they've done it, it's very new. I thought that they'd done it for Hotmail, but I thought that the passport was not using that system. So did you go to just passport.com and sign up from there?
Right. Now, if you want to try the method I did it, you bring up MSN Messenger, and there's a button in there for signing up for the service.
Okay.
And if you go through that procedure, you should come across that entry.
Oh, so you're going to be on MSN Messenger now. Watch out, world.
While you were discussing cell phones, I was looking at the manual, which is in Braille, though not all that great, and my Nokia cell phone.
Yep.
And I was trying to figure out some of this menus, and, for example, program the ringer. It turned out that I had someone program the ringer the way I wanted it earlier today, and then I accidentally changed it.
Mm-hmm.
And so far in my manual, it doesn't tell me exactly how to find the menu that can scroll through the ringers.
Yeah, it's frustrating. Look, I had a situation very similar, except that in my case, my new phone, which I do like in terms of its size and what it does, but it's got soft keys. So sometimes the keys operate as the send and the end keys, and other times they're okay and cancel and that sort of thing. Well, somehow, I managed to get it into completely silent mode, where it wouldn't ring, it wouldn't make any beeps, so I couldn't tell whether it was on or off. It was completely in silent mode, and if I were sighted, I would just be able to click that menu and it would immediately show me where to turn off silent mode. But because I couldn't, I was completely at a loss as to how to re-enable all the bells and whistles, the beeps and the rings and stuff on the phone.
Absolutely. Now, thank goodness my manual does show silent mode, and it also told me how to turn it back on. So I actually put it into silent mode and then was able to turn it back on.
Very good.
Silent mode, if you will.
Well, I'm going to have to get through two more calls before the end of the show, so I'm going to have to run.
Okay, one quick question. When will you have my most recent recording on your lovely program?
Your one about the two games?
Right.
Hopefully it'll be in 2 weeks' time after the Pac-Mate review is all over.
That sounds good.
Yes.
Maybe by then I can get my computer working right and get some of these other items in to you.
Woohoo. All right. Have a good night. I appreciate the call.
Okay, great.
Okay. Bye now. Let's go. Area code 602. Hello.
Hello, Jonathan.
Hi.
This is Ted.
How are you, Ted?
Thanks. Hey, I'm doing all right. How are you doing this? I guess it's a Monday afternoon out there in New Zealand, right?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
It's going to be fall soon there, too.
Yeah, it is.
Autumn in about a month, I think.
Yes, about March we'll be looking at autumn here, yeah.
Yeah. Boy, I'm in Phoenix, Arizona, and I'll tell you, it's starting to be 75 degrees for a high. That's 75 Fahrenheit, by the way.
Yep.
Which, given the temperatures and much of the rest of the United States, I think a lot of the others would be very envious of me.
Wow, there you go. And what's on your mind?
Run that by me again?
What's on your mind?
What is on my mind? Well, two quick things.
Yep.
Number one, I do want to congratulate ACB Radio for the award.
Thank you.
I think it is absolutely wonderful, and I'm glad that despite the burst of the dot-com bubble and despite the recent carpooling, that ACB Radio is still able to continue to run.
Well, we're delighted too. It's been a great journey.
Yes, yes. Number two, concerning the cell phone issue, and I kind of came in at the tail end of Charlie Crawford's conversation. One thought that does occur to me, it reminds me of when I was working for Syndan, and they had a copying machine. And it was one of those copiers where if you pressed one of the buttons at the lower left hand corner, all of the other buttons suddenly assumed different functions.
Yeah.
So if you went through and you memorized all the functions, if you press this one button, suddenly you had a whole new host of functions, and you didn't know what was going on if you were like me, being totally blind person.
Yes, frustrating, isn't it? You can be in a mode you didn't even know existed.
Very.
Yeah.
Very. So that certainly made access on that front very frustrating. And as I said, listening to the discussions on the cell phones kind of reminded me of that. So.
Well, listen, I've got to get through one more call before the automation system tells me to go, so I will quickly do that.
Off I go then, and you have a wonderful day, sir.
Thank you, Ted. Appreciate the call.
Alrighty.
Okay, bye-bye now. And finally, on today's show, area code 612, hello.
Hey, Jonathan, this is Phil Cragness. This is Rebecca's husband.
Ah, you'll be offering lots of tender, loving care at the moment, by the sounds of it.
Yeah, well, actually, I'm recuperating from quadruple bypass. So
oh,
I'm
no.
I'm around the house right now.
Oh, you guys are in a state.
Well, we got two good girls with four legs taking care of us. So.
Oh, very good.
I was calling in because when I first bought Rebecca's cell phone for, you know, as you mentioned, it works on number system. And I started a project that I actually never ended up completing, but what I did is start creating web pages on my hard drive that represented the menus on Rebecca's phone. So you could go to the opening page, find the option you want, click on, it would take you to the next menu. And so at least you'd have some idea what the menus contained.
Hmm.
And until we do have software, you know, it seems like, to me, an entrepreneur or someone, goodness of their heart, might create a website where you could go and pick the model of your phone and actually find out at least what some of the basic functions are.
Now, that is a very cool idea. I mean, it's a workaround kind of thing, but while we're waiting for those accessible phones, that sounds like a fantastic idea.
Yeah, it's one solution, and of course, listening to Charlie, too, I'm thinking right now companies are using, well, it's a financial burden. That won't stand up because of the multi-million-dollar nature of these companies.
Mm.
What they're using a lot is the non-availability exemption under the Code of Federal Regulations. So once the software is out there and available, these companies aren't going to be able to use that as excuse me. An excuse any longer.
No, and it sounds like that Charlie's in a position to prove that it is out there. Oh. Well, I do apologize to Phil. It seems that I lost my connection to Spiderphone there, so I do apologize. Very interesting idea about the mock-up, if you will, of the menus. And the fact that you could build them in HTML and give people an idea about how to navigate your cell phone. So there you go. I mean, there's no doubt that we have to deal with what we've got while also striving to build a better future. And that's what this complaint that Bonnie O'Day and the American Council of the Blind have put together. And all power to them. And that is where we will leave you. I anticipate being back next week. because you can never tell in these days of uncertainty and babies taking their own sweet time, as they tend to do. Last time, David was 14 days overdue and ended up being induced, and I said to my wife we should call him Leighton or late out. So who knows? Our son before that was 2 days early, so you just can't pick it, can you? Thank you very much for your calls and also for the emails about the AFB award. I really appreciate it, and I know that everybody else who is such an integral part